Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly, vigorous, relentless, and sometimes ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the extraordinarily well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. My pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. Just a free man trying to stay afloat in the sea of communism, and encourage you to be a part of the show with your calls, ideas, questions, comments, criticism, participation. That's the old number. 563-999-3787. 563-999-3787 is the studio line here to Well Armed Radio. start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. And first 50 minutes of the show is your chance to call in with anything you'd like to discuss. I'll throw that out there this week, even though I put the show link up late, like I have been doing recently. I keep thinking about getting the show up earlier, but it's being summer. I'm so busy. I don't know exactly what time I'll get home. I'm fairly confident I'm going to do a show most weekends, but because I'm so busy, I don't have the time to really pick a time earlier in the week. Although, you know, the sun's now going down earlier. It's, you know, late in the year, the sun, I mean, it's kind of light out till like 9 o'clock. Excuse me, did I say late in there? In June, you know, the summer solstice is June 21st. But I mean, it's pretty light out from, you know, all of June, most of July, till close to 9 o'clock. But now the sun goes down. I think today the sunset was like 8:05, and then that's here in eastern Wisconsin. It varies. The sunset varies depending on where you are in the state, which was totally crazy because a month ago when we took the yacht over to Saugatuck, there on the western side, that was at the end of June when, of course, the days are longer anyway. And then Saugatuck is on the very western edge of the eastern time zone. So Wisconsin is on the eastern edge of the central time zone. Oops, let me turn that down. Apologize for the computer noise there. So that's what's so interesting is like you go to Saugatuck and I mean, it's light out till like 10 o'clock at night. And that I might be exaggerating a little bit, but not much. I mean, honestly, I think because if here it's – no, that's probably about right because if here it's light out until – 9 o'clock when you get really close and around that summer solstice. Yeah, Saugatuck, it would be light out until pretty much 10 PM. And so it's just weird because at, you know, 9 o'clock at no time in Wisconsin, can you at 9 o'clock look up and see the sun, but in Western Michigan at 9 o'clock, you can look outside and still see the sunshine. So it's really, as a kid who I say grew up in eastern Wisconsin, I lived for a little bit in Naperville, but I'm as a kid who grew up in the eastern, you know, I've never lived more than an hour drive from Lake Michigan is an interesting fact. And obviously just always been in the eastern edge of the central time zone. So, you know, you're not used to sunsets that are after I think the latest is 8:40 something, 8:47 maybe is the latest sunset when you get to that summer solstice. But then again, still light out until usually 9 o'clock, sometimes even after 9 o'clock. It's still light here in Wisconsin, but eastern Wisconsin. But yeah, you go to Michigan, it's light all the way up until and probably past 10 o'clock. When I was younger, my dad lived in Berrien Springs, Michigan. That's where I spent my summers when I was, yeah, elementary age, maybe start of, mostly elementary age. I want to say he moved to Illinois, maybe sixth or seventh grade. But yeah, so I would say elementary age through maybe sixth grade, although I'm not so sure about that. It might have all been through elementary. Anyway, spent my summers in eastern Michigan, western Michigan, Berrien Springs, St. Joseph area. So just had a lot of time that we spent there. And spending the summers with my dad and really, really beautiful part of the state of Michigan and sand dunes and great beaches and much, much warmer water. They get the warm water from Lake Michigan and we get the cold water here. Speaking of cold water, we had the yacht out this weekend down by South Shore in Milwaukee. And I mean, I don't think I've seen the water hit 70 yet this year in on the western shore of Lake Michigan here. When the day we took the yacht over to Saugatuck, we left Milwaukee, and I think the water temperature was 65, 66 when we left Milwaukee. And then when we got to Michigan, got to Saugatuck, the water temperature was around 73, 74, something like that. So that's the difference that you get when you're on the warm side of the lake versus the cold side of the lake. And the reason for that is that the prevailing wind patterns are usually east to west, west to east. I'm getting all my directions wrong today. Prevailing wind patterns are west to east. So the warm surface water of Lake Michigan that gets heated up by the sun gets pushed to the western shore. and then you get what's called upwelling. Some days it's not too bad. If you get a really strong offshore breeze blowing from, you know, Milwaukee towards Michigan, you'll get so much upwelling that the cold water, so much of the surface water gets pushed and pressed into Michigan, that the circulation pushes, brings cold water up from the depths of Lake Michigan and cycles that right past Milwaukee. There was days, not this year, but other years, we were on at South Shore with the yacht and we were swimming in Lake Michigan and the water temperature was 70 some degrees on a Saturday. Then on a Sunday, took the dog down to the lake. It was a couple years ago. I was trying to teach the dog how to swim because he wasn't a very good swimmer at the time. Took him down to the lake and the water was like 59. So one day difference, it went from 74 degree water or mid 70 degree water to less than 60 degree water. And that's when you get that upwelling. You can Google it, Google Lake Michigan upwelling, and you'll read about it. But anyway, so, back to the reason I started this whole conversation, like to get the show scheduled earlier in the week so that people can maybe plan to tune in live, but end up not doing it because I never know what I'm going to be doing. Like today it was supposed to be, they talk about rain all day and we got very little rain. And so that's what happens in summer. But definitely in the winter we'll get the show scheduled early in the week. And maybe we'll get some live listenership. Right now, most of the listenership comes from the podcast. So if you're listening to this now, you're probably hearing the podcast as well at some point later in the week. So thanks for tuning in. But here's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about Rebecca Cleave Fishy. And we're going to talk about – so and here's why I bring this up. So I've had a lot of people and sometimes people say this, and I think they're bullshitting. Like you'll hear someone say – they'll go on social media and say, oh, everybody's asking me who I'm voting for. Well – I don't always believe those people. I think sometimes those people are just taking opportunity to go on social media and push their voting choices on other people, thinking they're some big influencer. But I've literally had three or four people ask me what I think of the governor's race. And I don't really feel like telling people who I'm voting for and just that's it. I mean, I want to give them some backstory. So that's the reason I'm going to do a segment today about who I'm voting for governor. And if you've listened to other podcasts, you probably already know. Spoiler alert, I'll be voting for Tim Michaels. Excuse me. But I have had enough people ask me. And again, I don't want to tell anybody who to vote for. So if I'm going to tell someone who I'm voting for, I want to tell them why, so that people can make their own choices. And again, I have no desire to tell people who to vote for. I find that offensive. You're grown adults. You make your own choices. If someone wants my opinion, I'll definitely give it to them. But again, I'm not just going to say, and I don't think anybody does. If I say to someone, oh, I'm voting for Michaels, I mean, I don't think people just want that. I'm not naive enough to think that someone's going to vote for Tim Michaels just because I am. So again, I'm going to explain why I'm voting for him. So that's the reason for me doing this topic tonight about who I'm for. I've talked about the governor's race many times. I'll talk about it a little bit more tonight. I'm going to talk about the PX4 Storm Compact Carry model, which I bought for my stepson for his birthday. I'm going to talk about Jessica McBride. If you don't know who Jessica McBride is, I thought twice about doing this segment because I really don't even want to give her any more exposure because I think she's pretty pathetic lately, and I'll explain why I think that. But so that I'm like, do I do this topic and then risk getting a few more people to go to her website or do I not? And I was torn, but I'm going to do the topic anyway. And then I've got a topic here tonight on members of Congress trading stocks. I saw something on Fox News recently about this suggestion / push to ban members of Congress from trading stocks because members of Congress get so much inside information. And so I'm going to talk about that because I have some opinions on that as well. And then maybe if we have time, we'll even not afraid to go there, talk about abortion because Kansas had a referendum on the state constitution about abortion this past week, which the voters rejected. And then talk radio was pontificating about. And so I thought I might do that topic as well. So that said, we'll jump right into it here with the first topic, and I'll talk. Let me do this one first because it's a short one. The PX4 Storm Compact Carry, and this is While I'm Radio, where, of course, if you've listened for any amount of time, I mean, we sometimes talk about guns, but we talk about a whole lot. Guns, self-defense, self-reliance, entrepreneurship. I mean, it's all about freedom. Guns are about freedom. Capitalism is about freedom. So self-reliance, self-defense, and entrepreneurship is about self-reliance and forging your own ways. So that's why I consider all these things very much related concepts and philosophies. So a lot of what we talk about on the show is not gun related, but certainly freedom related. And again, when we get into economic topics, that's certainly very much related to self-reliance, taking control of your own destiny and that kind of thing. So the PX4 Storm Compact Carry. So, but again, tonight we'll actually talk about guns. So one of my favorite guns, and I do call it my favorite gun, is the PX4 Storm Compact. I have a PX4 Storm Compact. Not the subcompact, the PX4 Storm Compact. I've got it. I had it. I don't know if I bought it 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. I mean, it's time flies and time runs together. I'm not sure exactly what year I bought it. It could have even been more. I mean, maybe even as far back as, I don't know, 2016, 2017. Anyway, so that's, you know, you're talking five, six years ago now. So I know it was when Gander Mountain still existed because I bought it at Gander Mountain. So that narrows it down at all. So I didn't have a 9mm. I was looking for a 9mm. I was at the store and I ended up seeing a compact, the Beretta PX4 Storm Compact. Here's what I really liked about it and the things that I liked about the gun. And, I figure I'll share those because they're relates to my discussion of the PX4 Storm Compact Carry, which is a different edition that I just, it's a different model, different version than the PX4 Storm Compact. And again, because I have the PX4 Storm Compact, not the compact carry, but so for that reason, I was going to do this little review because there's some differences that I've come across, and I was just pulling up some notes here that I had so I could reference those as I talk about this. So the PX4 Storm, what I liked about it is, well, first, I didn't have a 9mm, so I wanted to look for a 9mm, and the PX4 Storm was one that I saw there. I also like different models. I like to have all kinds of different models. I've already got a Glock. I've got a couple Smith & Wessons. I've got a Ruger. I've got a Kimber. I've got, now I'm forgetting. Those are pistols. I don't have a Springfield. I don't have, that might be all. For pistols, that might be all that I have. Glocks. Smith & Wessons, multiple Smith & Wessons, Kimber, I just have one Kimber, the Beretta, a Ruger, and I'd have to walk around my house and refresh my memory if I've got any of the other models. So I didn't have a Beretta, didn't have a 9mm, and then the thing that I liked about the PX4 Storm, the thing that I liked the most was the decocker, because in my model, the PX4 Storm Compact, it acts like a thumb safety, but yet, so you can, a Glock, you're supposed to carry condition one. When my fiance's kids were younger, I didn't, they were exposed to guns. Guns were always around the house. And of course, if the gun's not loaded, doesn't do you any good in the safe. And so, I just taught the kids, I beat it into them, not literally, but I beat it into them from a very young age that, look, these guns are all loaded. You pull the trigger, you're going to kill someone. I took them shooting. They shot just a 22, something very light and easy to handle so that they would learn to respect the gun. As they got a little bit older, then they would shoot like my Glock, a 40 caliber Glock. And I don't know if I ever had them shooting the 45. But so anyway, they always knew, here's how to load them. Here's how to unload them. Here's my Smith & Wesson airweight revolver. Here's how to load and unload that. Here's how to, so I taught them how to clear every gun. I would make them clear it in front of me, take them shooting so they weren't fascinated with guns. If I got a new gun, I took it and showed them how the new gun functions, how to clear the new gun. So pretty much they would get annoyed with it. So they weren't fascinated by guns. And so I think that the danger of a gun is when kids are fascinated by it and then it's forbidden fruit and then they are interested and curious and inquisitive, which kids are. And so then that's when, and they don't know how to handle it safely because you treat it like a forbidden fruit, and that's when accidents happen. So, but even that said, I still, you know, my kids, when my kids' friends came around, and I say my kids are my fiance's kids, but I call them my kids because I don't have kids of my own. So like I tell them, I don't, you know, I say to my daughters all the time, Kim's daughters, I say, look, I don't, I'm not your only dad, but you're my only daughter. So I just treat you like I would if you're my daughters. But don't trust their friends. Trust the kids. Trust my kids. Don't trust their friends. So when their friends would come over, then certainly I'd put the guns away. My Glock, I just, and again, you know, your purists are going to, you know, criticize. I don't care. I would carry my Glock condition 3. Nothing in the chamber, loaded magazine. That's how I would carry my Glock. And just for those taking notes and to refresh my own memory. So I don't even think you can condition 2. I don't think you can carry a Glock condition 2 because the Glock is a striker fire. Condition 2, I believe, is like a 1911 style where you can have round in the chamber, loaded magazine, hammered down. Condition 1 for a 1911 style handgun would be round in the chamber, loaded magazine, hammer back. That would be condition 1. So a Glock is either condition 3 or condition 1. I wonder, see, no, I don't even think you can do that. Yeah, because you can't have, on a striker fire pistol, you can't have the trigger, and someone might correct me here, but I don't think you can have the trigger pulled and a round still, well, if there was a dud round, certainly you could. But I don't think you could have the trigger pulled and a round in the chamber, because every time you cycle the slide, you would have a round in the chamber and the trigger live. There'd be no way to pull the trigger and not have a live round in this. So I don't think, yeah, I don't think, and again, it wouldn't even, the syntax is off, but I don't even think it'd be possible to, it would be pointless because you'd have to cycle the slide and eject a round in a striker fire pistol. Maybe there's a way to do it if you, you know, take the slide off and pull the trigger and anyway. And I don't even think there's, so you can't really, I don't think you can carry, correct me if I'm wrong, gun purist, but I don't think you can carry a Glock condition 2. So I carry the Glock condition 3, and I kind of, that was something I usually kept in my truck. And then I'm like, yeah, you know, I recognize that if you ever get carjacked, you're not going to have time to grab your gun, rack around and address the threat. So I kind of wanted a gun that I could carry, with a round in the chamber and just have a bit more of a safety mechanism than the trigger safety on a Glock. So that's why I like the decocker on my PX4 Storm. So things I like about the PX4 Storm, I like the decocker the most. I like that it acts like a thumb safety, but yet, you know, flick of the thumb and you're shooting double action. So if you rack around in a PX4 Storm, hammer back, live round, trigger's ready to go. I think it's like a 4 or 5 pound trigger pull. If you hit the decocker, the hammer drops. In mine, my 2016 or 17 or whatever model PX4 Storm Compact, the decocker stays down. The gun is, the trigger's not live. There's a round in the chamber, hammer's down. When you flick the decocker back up, the trigger is active. The hammer is down, so you're shooting double action. Double action means as you pull the trigger, two actions are performed, the hammer comes back, and the hammer is released. That's a double action trigger. That's for the first trigger pull. For the second trigger pull, you're shooting single action. So that's kind of cool too, because the double action trigger pull, I think, is like a 10 or 11 pound trigger pull, pretty heavy trigger pull. The second trigger pull is single action, which I think drops in half to like 4.5 or 5 pound trigger pull. This is with my 2016 model Glock PX4 Storm compact. So I like that it gets a hammer versus the Glocks I own that are just striker fire. And I think the rotating barrel is cool. There's a rotating barrel in the PX4 Storm. I don't really know that the rotating barrel does all that much to dissipate recoil, which is what the manufacturer claims that the dissipating barrel does. But it's just kind of cool, the rotating barrel. It's different. I like the fit of my hand. I mean, for a smaller-ish gun, I have big hands, but yet it's still a nice compact piece for a 15-plus-1 round gun. I think it acts like a bigger frame gun than it is. And to use a boxing analogy, I think it punches above its weight class. So I like the brand. I mean, everybody's got a Glock. Everybody's got a Smith & Wesson. Everybody's got a Springfield. But Beretta, I don't know. For me, Beretta just has a little bit more cachet to it. Beretta is a little bit more of a Cadillac than a Glock. They're just more of a Chevy. And that's just my, again, I know that these aren't exact analogies. But Beretta, it just has a little bit more of a cachet to me. And it's a cool-looking gun. I think it has a unique shape. Compared to the square slide of a Glock, and even a little bit more aesthetically pleasing, more curvy and angular than like the M&P Shield or the Springfield, and of course the Glock, which are just more square boxy looking guns. So I really like the PX4 Storm. Really like the decocker. I like that I can carry around in the chamber, but still have that decocker acting as like a thumb safety. And then, you really get in a firefight. The first trigger pull is a 10-pound trigger, get carjacked, grab the gun, flick up the thumb safety, the decocker, you're live with one round double action trigger pull. And then if one round doesn't suffice to stop the threat, your second shot is single action and every subsequent shot is single action. So much more precise trigger pull on the subsequent shots. So I wanted my stepson's turn 21. I wanted to my 21st birthday, my present to myself was my first Glock, a Glock. I think it's a Glock 23. I always forget. But Glock 23, it's a 40 caliber pre-ban. I bought it. So that would have been November of 1995, which I believe was my 21st birthday. So that was my first pistol, my first gun that I bought myself, that Glock. Still is one of my frequent everyday carries. I can't say everyday carry because I don't carry it every day, but it's one of my more frequent carries. I tend to open carry that one. So for my stepson, he turned 21, and I thought, rite of passage, I'm going to buy him a gun. So I bought him and I like the PX4 Storm. And again, I looked at different guns, and I was going to ask him what he wanted, show him some pictures, say, hey, pick out one you want, and I'll give you the money so you can go buy it for yourself. But then, after thinking about it, I'm like, I like my PX4 Storm so much, I'm just going to get him the Beretta, because that's what I would get if it was, if I was him. So I'm not going to give him a choice. So I ordered the PX4 Storm. And then when I talked to my friend who's the dealer, I'm looking around at these guns, and there's the PX4 Storm Compact, and there's the PX4 Storm Compact Carry. The compact carry is more expensive. It's got some trigger work done to it, a little bit of a lighter trigger pull on the single action trigger pull. And so I thought, not a concern for me. So it's a couple hundred more expensive, but I'll get them the PX4 Storm compact carry. And then a little thought went through my head is maybe I should buy it for myself, decide which one I like the most, and then give him the one I didn't, because he wouldn't care. In fact, I've never even shot my Beretta PX4 Storm, so it's a like new gun. It's never been fired. And then, but after thinking about it, I'm like, nah, I'll just, and plus I didn't have time to go to the store to get it. Midwest Handguns, little plug, Midwest Handguns is where I buy. Steve Gonzalez, great guy, owns Midwest Handguns. Used to run the store out in Ashapin, and then cool little town, cool little store, sits in the former bank I think a former little bank branch, but this is like a small town bank branch. Still got the vault. And again, really, really small town bank. It's like a, you know, don't picture like a, you know, suburban bank branch. Picture like a, you know, a one stoplight town bank branch, the old bank branch, very old bank branch. That's where that store is. And then I guess Steve moved to the UP, and I believe started a gun store up there, but Midwest Handguns is still operating. He's got a kid, Ben, operating it down here. And so I don't know, it's about probably a 45 minute drive from my house. I just didn't have time. So I said to my stepson, hey, here's the money. It's for you. You go do the 4473. It's your gun. You know, you go buy it. And there you go. So he did. Then he brings it home. And I'm looking at this thing. And so the first thing I noticed is on the PX4 Storm Compact Carry, and I'd watched some reviews on mine, but the Compact Carry, the decocker on mine is a very tactile decocker. I mean, you stick your thumb on it, it's easy to cock and decock. Or, well, it's easy to decock and then flip it back up for, you know, to re-engage the trigger. On the PX4 Storm Compact Carry, the decocker is very, very slim. And it's so much so that it's actually a little bit hard to operate with your thumb. So I'm like, I saw this on online reviews before I bought it, but I didn't think much of it. This one guy that did some mods, he took the decocker button, the decocker lever, the old model decocker lever on it, which is more obtrusive. It sticks out more from the gun, so it's easier to decock with your thumb. But then the other thing that I noticed when my stepson brought the gun home and I was looking it over is the decocker on the PX4 Storm Compact Carry is literally just a decocker. It doesn't act like a thumb safety. So at first I was a little bit bummed about that, because now, of course, if you're, you know, the carry purists, and again, I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry, but I don't consider myself a gun snob. I really don't. I think same way, these are the same kind of people who, no one should carry anything less than a 45. I would never carry a 22 for self-defense. It's a 22 is not a self-defense caliber. Meanwhile, no one I know wants to get shot with a 22, and 95% of defensive gun uses, you don't even have to fire the gun. So a 22 would deliver you from evil just fine. But again, you got those gun snobs that'll say stuff like that. And then you're going to have the gun snobs to say, well, why would you carry a, you know, you shouldn't carry my 1911 is cocked and locked, and my, you know, the decocker is fine, but why would you leave it down as a thumb safety? You should leave that trigger engaged for quick, quick deployment. Again, it's one of the things I liked about it. And at least then you have the choice when the decocker is a thumb safety as well. You have the choice of whether you want to decock it and then flip it back up and just leave it a 10-pound trigger pull, or if you want to decock it and leave it down and have an inactive trigger. Well, that choice is taken away with the compact carry model. And I guess I get why they did it. I mean, for a carry, first off, it is that thumb safety, that decocker on the PX4 Storm Compact Carry is difficult to operate. So you wouldn't want to be in a self-defense situation, pull your gun, and, oh, I've got the decocker down, and I can't, in the stress of a life or death situation, get the decocker flipped back up to activate the trigger. That would be, now you're dead. So so that's understandable. If it was me, I would have, and I get the reason that perhaps with that real slim decocker lever is because as a carry gun, you want it to be as slim, nothing to brush on clothing, less to print. A little decocker lever, not like that's going to be the big printing anyway, but just, if you want as sleek of a gun as possible, yeah, the decocker lever on the PX4 Storm Compact Carry is slimmer. And being slimmer, I understand, more difficult to operate. They don't want it to be a thumb safety. They just leave it as a decocker. So I'm kind of glad that I didn't give my stepson my old PX4 Storm Compact and take the Compact Carry. and rather I let him have the compact carry. That said, I mean, honestly, I probably would have bought him, knowing what I know now, I probably would have bought him the PX4 Storm Compact, the regular model, not the compact carry, and had the thumb safety, decocker thumb safety combination. But yeah, it's a cool little gun. Just something I thought I'd mention on the show because I don't talk, well, I certainly don't do gun reviews very often, and I'm not a gun nerd. I'm a gun rights nerd, but not a gun nerd. There's certainly tons of members of Wisconsin Carry that know way more about firearms than I do. But, you know, every year I learn more and more. I'm continuously learning more about different kinds of pistols and such. Though I'll never be gun guy. I'm a gun rights guy. I'm a carry guy. I'm a self-defense guy. But so I become a little bit more of a gun guy every year, but don't profess to be one. Like, gosh, we've got members who can tell you every make, model, caliber, and specification of firearms out there. So next thing I'll talk about tonight is Rebecca Clefish, Tim Michaels, Tim Rantham. I talked about last week on the show. I've had questions, and I refer people to say, because I don't have time. Every person that asks me a question, I don't have time to go through the whole thing with them. So I like to make most efficient use of my time. And if I can cover a topic on Well Armed Radio in depth, say it once, and then I can send 5, 6, 10 people to the podcast, then I'm better off. My time was a better use rather than taking 10 times to tell 10 people things, taking 10 minutes, 10 times to tell 10 people, 10 things. I can take 10 minutes one time to tell 10 people something. And again, just more efficient use of my time. So I'll go over this again. Apologies to those who tuned in last week and already know what I... So Rebecca Clefish, Lieutenant Governor, here's what I think, and this goes to the Scott Walker administration. I think Scott Walker Act 10 was fantastic. I mean, I had the Scott, I still have it. It's no longer displayed. It's on the inside of a metal cabinet in my garage, metal storage cabinet. Scott Walker is my hero. I had the magnetic bumper sticker. I 100% supported Scott Walker for his ballsiness with Act 10. Even in amongst right around the Act 10 time was when Scott Walker sold us out, when I say us, Wisconsin Carry, out on constitutional carry. Quick backstory on that. When it was the primary campaign with Mark Newman and Scott Walker, I talked to both campaigns. I talked to Mark Newman in person, not in person, on the phone directly. And I said, hey, Mark, Wisconsin Carry is really going to make a push for constitutional carry. This is 2010 at the time. I said, I'm not going to ask you to be the champion of constitutional carry, but if we can get constitutional carry to your desk, would you sign it? He said, oh, for sure. 100% yes. I support constitutional carry. Concealed carry where you don't have to get the permit. You're just anyone who's not prohibited from owning and possessing a firearm can legally carry that firearm. Then you got Scott Walker, who I didn't talk to Scott Walker personally. I contacted his campaign and Keith Gilks, who at the time was his campaign manager, who later became his chief of staff, got back to me on a phone call. And I said to Keith, I said, Keith, I'm going to pose you the same question I posed Mark Newman. If Wisconsin Carry can get constitutional carry to your to Scott's desk, would he sign it? And Keith Gilks said, yes, easy. That's an easy answer. 100% yes. You know, you to his desk and he'll sign it. And I said to both, I said, look, I'm not going to ask you guys to go out and be the champion of this. I recognize that this is a constitutional carry shall issue. I would expect you both to be pushing for concealed carry in general, but constitutional carry at the time was, you know, it would have been a bold step for Wisconsin to go from no carry, no concealed carry, to constitutional carry. But we almost pulled it off. So we got constitutional carry to the floor of the Senate. Of course, Scott Walker wins the primary, gets elected governor. We get constitutional carry to the floor of the Senate, and Scott Walker goes on TV and says, any bill that gets to my desk must have mandatory training and a permit. If I have to have a license to ride my Harley, you should have to have a license to carry a gun. So next day, talk radio comes out, everybody except Vicki McKenna, Charlie Sykes, Jay Weber, Mark Belling, all. Charlie Sykes really bashed constitutional carry, bashed me personally, called Wisconsin Carry the kook fringe. Mark Belling bashed the concept of constitutional carry. He said, look, this, you know, the concealed carry license system should be the easiest vote ever. You know, we shouldn't try to complicate it with this constitutional carry thing. And Jay Weber threw constitutional carry under the bus as well. And so that's when constitutional carry died. Several times we had school grounds carry constitutional carry to the to either committee vote or passed out of committee to the floor of the Senate. Never moved forward. Robin Voss squashed it a couple times, squashed school grounds carry bills. Scott Walker said, we don't need this. When the bill was up in 2018, a school grounds carry / constitutional carry combination bill. So we got sold out by the elected Republicans. We had a Republican governor, Republican Senate, Republican Assembly, and every substantive gun bill we tried to push after concealed carry was passed and after Castle Doctrine was passed, every other substantive gun bill that we tried to push was scuttled by Republicans. And so that was really my awakening that, look, these establishment, these elected Republicans, they don't push for their principles. They don't push for their, for what they claim. They campaign as the second coming of Charlton Heston, brag about their Second Amendment, or excuse me, brag about their NRA A-plus rating. But when push comes to shove, gun rights and gun rights advocates are the redheaded stepchildren to politicians. They wish we'd go away. They wish we'd shut up and just vote for them. They treat us like, honestly, like Democrats treat the black vote. They think we're not going anywhere. And for that reason, they can kick us to the curb and kick our legislation to the curb, and we'll still be there to vote for them come election time. And I think that's a mistake. I mean, certainly many of us will, but they could be appealing to people who aren't regular voters, who would take note of a politician who is actually pushing for people, and they don't. And so that's really disappointing, but it really taught me a lesson about Republicans, and that's that, guessing at percentages here, but I'll be generous and say 85% of Republicans are purely media driven. I'd say about 30% of Republicans are true rhinos. They have an R behind their name, but they don't even really believe in the conservative platform, the conservative agenda. Then I think you got another 40% for a total of 50%. So you got 30% are just rhinos. They're really not even, as a matter of principle, all that conservative. Then you got another 50% who would like to be conservative. They're conservative when it's convenient. They're convenient conservatives. If it's convenient and they think, oh, okay, then they'll be conservative. But they're really, really quick to sell out. They're not ballsy. They're not willing to go to the floor for conservative bills, for conservative principles. Their main concern is just getting reelected. Media worshipers, mainstream media worshipers, Marquette University Law School poll worshipers, just no backbone. Republican, but not very conservative. And then you've got, I'll say, I'm being generous here, I'll say 20%, and that's really generous. It's probably more like 10%, but we'll say 20% of Republicans who are really ballbuster fighters. Like they'll push, like Ron Johnson has turned into one of these. He's willing to say to hell with the media, doesn't mind negative press. I shouldn't say doesn't mind negative press. Isn't going to be stopped by negative press. And he'll do what's right. And he'll try to win by achieving conservative end results instead of trying to win by playing to the center. And so that's what my experiences during Scott Walker's administration taught me. And I'm just going to be honest, Rebecca Clefish was part of Scott Walker's administration. She was lieutenant governor for 8 years under Walker. She, in the latter part of Scott Walker's term, she was championing things like things that we would now consider this woke bullshit of criminal justice reform. I remember hearing her on Mark Belling's show talking about how we need to treat convicts as correctional customers. Stop calling them convicts, call them correctional customers. I mean, just the kind of ninny bullshit name game, you know, pathetic stuff that you'd expect out of a liberal. And then I see all the support that's coalescing around her, and it's Robin Voss. It's the people that sold out Wisconsin Carry, sold out conservative stuff over and over and over again. You know, you got conservatives in the legislature like Andre Jacques. You got conservatives in the legislature like Steve Nass. Trying to think of some other, like, real ballbuster conservatives. There's not many. And, again, that's why my 20% is probably a pretty generous number. But Janelle Branchen. Janelle Branchen, she's a real conservative chick. She's another one. So Rebecca Clefish is from that pedigree. She's been in Madison for well over a decade. She was a legislator before she was lieutenant governor. She was married to Joel Clefish, who was also in the legislature. He was an assembly rep, and then he didn't run for election. Now he has a lobbying firm in Madison. And she's also, again, got all the support of the establishment folks, Robin Voss, the party. And I know at first it was, again, no offense to Rebecca, but people with that pedigree do not champion stuff like constitutional carry. They do not do bold, aggressive, conservative things. And even Scott Walker was really just a one-trick pony. Act 10 was the only conservative thing he pushed. Right to work, he said, was a distraction. Prevailing wage reform, he wasn't interested in. It was people in the legislature that had to move that forward. And the people in the legislature that moved it forward got punished for doing it. I think it was Andre Jacques who had a hearing on prevailing wage reform. And Robin Voss didn't want him to, because Robin Voss was in tight with road builders. And so Robin Voss punishes Andre Jacques by not giving him any any committee assignments. Usually the most senior person, most senior legislature on the committee gets the chairmanship. And Andre Jacques would have been the most senior person in the particular committees he was on, and he didn't get a chairmanship. Robin Voss pulled him from him. It was punishment. So then Andre Jacques turns around, runs for Senate instead, gets elected to Senate, and, you know, that's another story in and of itself. But so these are all things that went on during Walker's administration. And remember, Scott Walker had to be begged not to take the Medicaid expansion money when Obama passed Obamacare. I mean, just again, Scott Walker was there was supposed to be an Act 10 Part 2 that was going to affect police and fire. And honestly, if we'd have got that Act 10 Part 2 that would affect police and fire, we might not have some of the still lingering pension problems that we have. We might have been able to address some of the, look, if these people who believe that there's just a few bad apples in police work, union protections prevented and there's definitely a few bad apples in police work. We've seen plenty of examples of that in Milwaukee, from the Frank Jude stuff to, there was a cop in Milwaukee who was, I think he was assigned on the South Side. And there's video of this guy just going off. I mean, there's definitely some bad apples in there. And again, we can argue about what percentage of cops fall into that category. But Act 10 Part 2 would have given more ability to weed out those bad apples and maybe head off some of the things that these liberals hang their talking points on when it comes to policing. And they point to some, you know, things that a few bad cops did. Again, they also point to stuff that good cops did that isn't bad, that they make out to be bad. So these are two, you know, but there are bad things bad cops did that union protections made it difficult to get rid of those bad cops. So again, these are all things that are part of the Walker administration, part of things that Scott Walker and Robin Voss scuttled together. And Rebecca Clefish was part of the administration, and she went right along with it. She was a yes, ma'am woman. You know, she would do what she was told. And she's just entrenched in that same establishment that only got a fraction of the conservative stuff that we could have gotten done during the Walker administration. Second half of the first term and the second term in its entirety. And no one wants to dig into that. People want to talk about Tim Michaels and examine his, you know, and again, don't get me wrong, I'm concerned because Tim Michaels effectively lived in Connecticut for 10 years plus. And his wife got real cozy out there. Kids go to school out there. I mean, she's members, I'm sure, of country clubs. And I just perceive that that coasting, it doesn't bother me in and of itself that Tim Michaels had dual residence. He always maintained a legal residence in Wisconsin. You know why he maintained a legal residence in Wisconsin? Because our taxes are lower. He wants to pay Wisconsin taxes, not New York taxes, not Connecticut taxes. But that notwithstanding, I wouldn't hold it against him if he wants to live in a, if he needed to live in a different state for whatever reason. But the coasts, man, the coast there, it's more liberal than you can even imagine. Just the saturation. I've got friends from California, and when you spend day in, day out just suffocated with that liberal crap, you get that inferiority complex. I think I talked about this. I know I've talked about this in the past couple of weeks, but Illinois is a very conservative state, except for the Chicagoland area. But you go outstate Illinois, there's a lot of conservatives out there. But you go to even the Republicans in the suburbs of Chicago, they're really, really, really weak on gun rights because they're in such a saturation state that's so unfriendly to gun rights. They develop that baseline inferiority complex when it comes to gun rights. And so that's my concern, is that Tim Michaels, he says, well, the only person that influenced me is my wife. Yeah, well, your wife's a coastie. That worries me. Now, I know for sure, I can't say for sure, 95% do I believe Rebecca Clefish would be just another rhino establishment Republican. I give that 95% probability. But when it comes to Tim Michaels, I'm 60-40. I'm 60% optimistic that he would be the ball buster conservative that he campaigns as. Maybe even a Ron DeSantis-like type. I can't see that, again, 95% chance Clefish is other than a DeSantis-type Republican. I could be wrong. I don't think so. Because for Clefish to be a Ron DeSantis-like Republican, she would have to buck Robin Voss. And Robin Voss is endorsing her. All the establishment insiders are endorsing her. And she's going to turn around and buck all them and be a DeSantis-type in Wisconsin? No fucking way. Not a chance. And I say not a chance again. I'll give it a 5% chance. I'm being generous. I should give it a 2% chance. But so meanwhile, everybody's examining and scrutinizing Tim Michaels. Tim Michaels was supported raising the gas tax when it was actually Tim Michaels was part of a trade organization that as a group had lobbied for an increase in the gas tax, but Tim Michaels didn't personally advocate for increasing the gas tax. And Rebecca Clefish runs commercials saying that Tim Michaels was against right-to-work legislation when Rebecca Clefish was part of the Walker administration, who said right-to-work was a distraction. The Walker administration dissed right-to-work. And it was people in the legislature that had to push it forward. So this is all stuff, but this isn't being scrutinized right now. We're scrutinizing Tim Michaels' record. We're scrutinizing Tim Michaels' background. And there is no scrutiny going on for Rebecca Clefishy. That's very telling. And because if people aren't going to hold Clefish to account now, they're sure as hell not going to hold her to account when she's governor. Then she's the ivory tower. Then she's... I go to these Republican events, and this is why, like, even people like Dan O'Donnell, conservative talk show, if you go to all kinds of Republican events, you don't get a true pulse of grassroots conservatives. I'm not talking politically active conservatives like the people that volunteer their time for the Waukesha Republican Party. I'm talking about grassroots conservatives, just MAGA Republicans, call them. Make America Great Again Republicans. You're rural. You're not talking suburban soccer moms. We're talking a roofer out in Fort Atkinson. Someone who works in an auto body shop up in Hixton, Wisconsin. Someone who delivers for Amazon out in Rock County. Those kinds of conservative type folks. People like conservative talk show hosts that go to their events and think they get a pulse of real people. They don't. They don't talk to those kind of people. And when they do go to events, the kind of people that come up and talk to them, they're kind of like your brown noser ass kissers who are going to genuflect to whatever they perceive you feel. When Scott Fitzgerald comes back to Wisconsin and goes to event that Kevin Nicholson puts on. People don't go up to Scott Fitzgerald and say, hey, you need to be more of a ball buster in D.C. They don't do that. They go up and say, oh, Scott, you're great. You're great. You know, everybody kisses his ass. You just don't get their a true pulse. So that's where you got to go to the grocery store. You got to go see, hear, and talk to people who, you know, go to a gym, go to a tailgate with a bunch of West Dallas people at Miller Park to really get a pulse of what actual blue-collar, run-of-the-mill conservative people feel. Talk show hosts like Dan O'Donnell don't get that pulse. They're marginal celebrities. They don't get a true pulse. Elected politicians certainly don't get a true pulse from people. And so that's where you get this disconnected establishment block of the Republican Party that just doesn't get it, that just doesn't really have the balls or the guts or the brains or the passion to push for real conservative stuff. And that's Rebecca. So again, Tim Michaels, I was very much hoping Tim Rampton would do better. He's run a terrible campaign. But Clefish is part of that establishment group that I think has, again, I say no chance. Again, I'll be generous and give her a 5% chance of being a true ballbuster Republican. I would give Tim Michaels a 60% chance of being a true ballbuster Republican. Would he be as I don't see, I'm not a, I was passionate about Tim Rampton. He proved that he's willing to buck Robin Voss. But ran a terrible campaign, his campaign went over, it's throwing away your vote. And people say, oh, no, if everybody who supported Tim Rampton would vote for him, he could do well. No, Tim Rampton is polling at, 4%? If he doubled his support, he's at, 8%? If he tripled his support, he's at 12%. If he quadrupled his support, he's at 16%. Tim Rampton does not have the support. Even if every single person who liked Tim Rampton, every single person who agreed with Tim Rampton, went out and voted for him in the primary, and he massively outperformed by an exponent of 4, he still doesn't win, doesn't even come close to winning. So to those who, if you're voting for, if you really don't care between Tim Michaels and Rebecca Clefish, go ahead and throw your vote away on Tim Rampton. But if you think that, because for me, I think Rebecca Clefish would be, I don't want to say a disaster, but just a huge missed opportunity. Because we're not going to get anything ballsy with Rebecca Clefish. And here's the other thing. I didn't like her at first purely because of her establishment coziness and connections. And again, I know from experience how strong those are. But now, having seen how much of a pathetic hypocrite she is with her campaign and her lies, proves to me that Clefish will literally say anything to win an election, which means she'll do anything as governor to chase what she perceives as the politically expedient thing to do. And that's a recipe for a Republican in office that's going to frustrate conservatives who want, and that's why Republicans don't win multiple elections, because they get elected and they don't make a substantive change and they end up running towards the center And then they piss off the conservatives who wanted true conservative reform. And then the conservative loyalists, that's not enough to sway an election. You really need the people who are somewhat disengaged, who only go out and vote and get their brothers and sister and kids to adult kids, you know, voting age kids to go vote when they've got a candidate they're really passionate about. That was Trump. It's not going to be Rebecca Clefish. And she's not going to do the kinds of things in office that are going to get people passionate. Like Scott Walker's recall election. Damn it. You know, every conservative, every blue collar, freedom loving person was making sure they got out to vote, making sure their wife made it to the polls that day, making sure their kids that were of voting age made it to their polls that day. That's where you get that extra bump that conservatives need to win. Clefish isn't going to bring that out of people. Not being an establishment, Robin Voss suck up. It's going to run to the center. So again, it's not like I'm a fanboy for Tim Michaels. For me, I'm convinced that Tim Michaels is a far, 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 far higher likelihood to be a ballbuster Republican than Rebecca Clefishy. Now, if you think that Rebecca Clefish is, I mean, she's certainly better than Evers. If you think Rebecca Clefish, if you think Tim Michaels couldn't get elected and Clefish would, I mean, okay, that's another angle to take. I think Michaels is more likely to beat Evers than Clefish. But again, I'm not telling anybody who to vote for. I'm just telling you why, how I came to the conclusion that I did. That's why I'm voting. I'll be voting for Michaels. So speaking of people and sycophants, you got Jessica McRide. So Wisconsin Right Now is a website that prior to the Republican primary for governor, I really like going to. They do some great investigative reporting and journalism on crime, on some other things. And so I bookmarked their website. Now as the campaigns rolled on, like early on in the campaign, Wisconsin Right Now does this investigative journalism piece to expose the fact that Tim Michaels spends most of his, has been living in Connecticut for the last decade, still maintains a legal residence in Wisconsin, but his family lives in Connecticut. His wife's in Connecticut, kids are in Connecticut, kids go to school out there, they're members of all their extracurricular stuff out there, yacht clubs and sailing clubs. And they're coasties. Now, Tim spends enough time here in Wisconsin, and I am sure as president of a construction company, spends enough time. I mean, good executives, they get out there enough to rub elbows with their people. And good business people, they don't, they get in the trenches metaphorically with their labor force enough to get some genuine feedback. It's just, it's a good business practice. Unlike politicians who never get into positions where they're really getting in deep with their constituents. And so anyway, I think Tim's still got some good Midwestern values connections as the president of a company based here in Wisconsin. And, you know, spending half his time here, he spends half his time here. If it wasn't for Tim Michaels spending half his time on the coasts, I probably would have supported Tim Michaels over Kevin Nicholson. But that, because I was kind of between Michaels and Nicholson until I found out that Tim Michaels, again, has so many roots planted out east. Again, still got Wisconsin roots because he has roots planted out east. But again, we've dug into all this. We've dug into the fact that where Tim Michaels, Wisconsin Right Now has pushed where Tim Michaels spends a lot of his time and half his time living. We've dug into Tim Michaels being part of trade organizations that did push for the gas tax. We have not dug into the fact, no one's dug into the fact that, oh yeah, Rebecca Clefish was part of the Walker administration, which was against right to work. That hasn't been put out there and scrutinized. So, you know, early on in this Republican campaign earlier in the summer when Jessica McBride and Wisconsin Right Now come out with this story about Tim Michaels being from the coast. They're like, you know, we're just journalists. We're just putting the information out there so people can decide. We just want to make sure that people don't get Hagedorn. Well, then guess what? Today, Jessica McBride and Jim Piavarczyk from Wisconsin Right Now, these two quote journalists, they came out and endorsed Rebecca Clefish for governor, which for any of us who are paying attention for the past 3-4 weeks or more, knew that they were in the tank for Rebecca. So here is someone who was professing to be a journalist for the past 2-4 months, reporting on the Republican primary under the guise of being a journalist. And oh, here we go now, the week before the primary election. By the way, this journalist who is just reporting stuff to be objective is going to come out and endorse Rebecca Clefish. It's absolute crap. And no one's going to call her for it, but they should. You can't sit there and profess to be a journalist and, oh, I'm just giving people information, and then come out and endorse someone. If you're endorsing people, you're not a journalist. You're not objective. You are a political operative. And then they write this. So here's another thing. And this is something, always never pay attention. Even Republicans, don't believe what they say about Donald Trump. If you don't hear it from Donald Trump's mouth, don't believe a word anyone says that he said. Because Jessica McBride writes an article on Wisconsin Right Now complaining that Trump was trashing Rebecca Clefish and bashing Rebecca Clefish and her family, and family should be off limits. I mean, it's so pathetic. I mean, I felt like saying to Jessica McBride, send her a message, say, hey, don't you have like a controversial police chief somewhere you can go have an affair with right now? So a friend of mine calls me and says, hey, did you watch Trump's rally? I said, no. I mean, I saw a snippet on the news. They're like, yeah, because Jessica McBride from Wisconsin Right Now, the website is just trashing Trump for what he said about Rebecca. So I went and watched the Trump rally, and Trump literally spent 1 minute talking about Rebecca Clefish. Trump spoke for over an hour. He spent literally 1 minute talking about Rebecca Clefish. That was it. And then Jessica McBride saying how Trump was classless or whatever. She's, I mean, again, don't believe what anybody says about Trump if you didn't hear it with your own ears. Because even Republicans will misrepresent what Trump said to push their own agenda. And that's a shame. Because you got people like Jessica McBride and these Republicans. Like, Republicans just love to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Trump's a winner. He won in 2016 against all odds and the Never Trumpers. He won big in 2018, if not for, 2020, if not for stolen elections. And I'm sorry, but if you think that Trump didn't actually win that election, I mean, look, he got 12 million more votes than the last time around. Trump won the hearts and minds. Of course, the effective after the steal is that, you know, Trump didn't quote win the election because Joe Biden is president, but Trump actually did win the hearts and minds of people. He won Trump. I'll put it this way. Trump won the legitimate vote. He did what you need to do. He won the hearts and minds of people. He, with his policies and his results, he gained enough support to have a mandate for a second term, but it was stolen away with vote fraud, which has now been well documented. And you still have even conservatives like, well, oh, if you're, you know, even conservatives on WISN, Dan O'Donnell, just sitting here, you know, mocking people who still want to talk about election fraud. Crime of the century. I mean, I don't think there's anything more fundamental to America, to the United States of America, than free and fair elections. And we had a presidential election literally stolen with vote fraud. And it's just, look forward, not back. You kidding? If when Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden knocked down those towers and killed 3,000 people, did you say, oh, a year later, well, we need to look forward, not back? No, we went and we killed the motherfuckers. We destroyed the Taliban in Afghanistan. Of course, Biden's now got them all back doing their thing. But you don't undertake the crime of the century, steal a presidential election, and then all these Republicans are just like, look forward to 2022. That's where you lose freedom forever, when you got Republicans just turn the other way and expecting something different to happen last time when you didn't address anything that happened this time. Oh, Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake's awesome. My least favorite host, so much so that I can't, Dave Michaels, not his real last name, but that's his radio name, Dave Michaels on WISN. He was doing a topic and he's talking about, people that don't support Rebecca Clefish, these suburban women, let's be honest, they're just jealous. He literally said that on the air. And I'm like, are you kidding me? They're just jealous of a successful woman. And it's like, okay. Diane Henricks is one of the richest people in the country. She's a billionaire. She was a Clefish supporter, and then she went looking elsewhere and is now supporting Tim Michaels. And I'm sure that Diane Henricks isn't jealous of Rebecca Clefish's success. The reason Clefish has lost support is because she's not very likable. She's phony. She comes off poorly to people. And, you've got talk radio making excuses. Mark Belling, she's from TV. That's her TV. Her training is in TV. Dan O'Donnell, it's her background is as a TV host. They write her passes on all that stuff. And to that, again, so we got Carrie Lake out in Arizona who wins she's the Trump-supported candidate out in Arizona I've loved her. She resigned or she quits her job as a news anchor on air saying how leftist the news had become and that this was going to be her last broadcast. Does it right on the news show, which is just fantastic. Uses her anchor chair to bash the news media and quit. Runs for governor. Wins the Republican primary. Almost certainly going to be the next governor of Arizona. And I've liked her from day one. She's no bullshit, straight talker, very genuine. So for anybody who says, people are just jealous of a successful woman. Nope. Because Carrie Lake, I think, is awesome. And she's a successful woman and a television news anchor. But she comes off genuine. And that's the difference. So it's not even because someone comes off their former news anchor. They're not. Look at how Carrie Lake talks. Look at how Carrie Lake communicates with people. And look at how Rebecca Clefish communicates with people. And you tell me. It's not because you can be a news personality and still a former news anchor and still connect with people. Rebecca Clefish just doesn't. What else we got tonight? I was going to talk about members of Congress trading stocks. This is a funny one because I saw this on Fox News. There's suggestions. I wouldn't say there's any proposals out there, but there's discussion that members of Congress shouldn't trade stocks because they have too much access to inside information. And then they cite a couple examples of, people who get their intelligence briefings or their classified briefings and or briefings from various government agencies, and then they realize that there's going to be a COVID lockdowns, and they go out and buy stock in Zoom, and that shouldn't be allowed. And I'm certainly this stuff does happen. I'm not saying this doesn't happen. It certainly does. But when people are calling for like a ban on Congress people trading stocks, I mean, this is not a fix. Because what are you going to ban a congressman or woman from trading stocks? Then you'd have to ban their husband. Then you'd have to ban every relative of theirs and every friend of theirs. It wouldn't work. Because if they can't personally trade stocks, they're just going to tell someone they know what stocks to buy. And then that person will trade, buy the stocks that based on the insider information they're getting from a congressperson. So it's just not a fix. I mean, this is no different than term limits. But, okay, one thing that might work, let's say, with trading stocks. Maybe there's some kind of sunshine. But even that, because they would still find ways to hide. I was going to say if every person, every trade that a congressman made would get publicly reported, but they would make so many trades that it would just get lost in noise. I mean, no one would, you know, you couldn't even have time to report on them all. And of course, the lefty media wouldn't. They wouldn't report on controversy. They wouldn't report that Nancy Pelosi would, you know, based on insider information, buy a bunch of stock in some company. And then, oh, that company gets a huge government contract. Oh, the company stock goes way up. Nancy Pelosi makes millions. I use the same example of term limits. People want term limits because they think it would be a fix to these career politicians that get in office and stay in office forever. And as John McCain showed, I think the only thing worse than a person who doesn't have to, or excuse me, the only thing worse than a career politician is a career politician who never has to face the voters again. And that's what John McCain proved. When you're in office and you're never having to face the voters again, look at what presidents do. At the end of their second term, they issue a whole bunch of pardons. All the controversial stuff they want to do, they do at the end of their second term because they can't face the voters again. They're term limited out. Do you want, there's 100 senators. Let's say then every senator can only serve two terms. That would mean that half of the senators would be running up into their term limit every 10 years. Do you want 50 senators every, well, it'd be five because if they're staggered. Do you want 50 senators every 5 years who are lame ducks who could never run for, I mean, Senate's the highest office you can hold other than president. So do you want 50 lame duck senators who are going to go work for some lobbying firm as soon as they can't be a senator anymore. So what's the last thing they're going to do? Push through legislation to favor this person, that person, to garner themselves a great position after they get out of, you know, it's just not a fix. Term limits aren't a fix. When it comes to stocks and Congress members trading stocks, the only thing that's a fix is to get government out of private business endeavors, and they won't have inside stock tips to trade on. Get government policy off the back of businesses, and members of Congress won't know what's coming down the pipe to trade on. When you get government involved in every aspect of people's lives and in every aspect of commerce, they're going to have access to information, and no silly rule is going to prevent them from finding a workaround. If you want more proof, just look at Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and the kickbacks for the big guy. Even if the person in office can't get rich off of it. There's a guy who wrote, there's a book, I haven't read the book, but I've heard it talked about enough, who talks about how congressmen get rich. He wrote a book on it. It's probably 5 years old or more, but I heard it's a really good book. I haven't read it, but I heard it's a really good book. So yeah, just like term limits aren't a fix to career politicians, banning members of Congress from trading stocks, that's not a fix to insider trading from Congress people. But all right, so I got 10 minutes left. I'll hit this one real quick because I teased it. Abortion. So this past week, Kansas had a referendum on the state constitutional amendment. And essentially, and referendums are always worded funny, but essentially there was discussion, or the amendment centered around if the amendment passed, then Kansas could regulate abortion. If the amendment was rejected, then Kansas regulate abortion. And 2/3 of the voters in Kansas rejected the amendment, which means that they were saying to Kansas government, no, we don't want the government regulating abortion. Maybe a surprising result to some people because Kansas is a relatively conservative place. I'm listening to talk radio, both local and or regional, I guess, WISN, you know, regional Southeast Wisconsin talk radio, and the Clay and Buck Show, which is a national syndicated show. And they were saying, oh, you know, it was all the phony ads and money being spent by the left. There was all kinds of misleading commercials. And look, Republican talking heads need to stop treating their constituency like rubes and trust the voters. This is just my observation. I wasn't in Kansas. I didn't see the commercials. I really think most people are very against late-term abortion and probably uncomfortable with anything other than like very, very early term abortion. But I mean, look, I'm uncomfortable with marital infidelity. I'm uncomfortable with feeding kids junk food and childhood obesity, setting kids up for a lifetime of health issues. But we're talking about legal versus illegal, not moral versus immoral. So these people that are ready to like dismiss, these Republicans are ready to dismiss the Kansas referendum as an anomaly or as not really representative. I think the Republicans really should realize that there is a lot of conservatives who are against abortion, but just don't think it's, again, the government's job. Late-term abortion, yes, against it. I think there's most conservatives would be okay with laws. I think almost all conservatives, and I think probably a majority of Democrats would be okay with laws against late-term abortion. But that's not really where it seems to me like the Republican position is. Now that we've got the Roe v. Wade overturned, example Wisconsin, where abortions are prohibited, period, we're just going to leave that be. Look, if it was me, I said this in the show before, send me the hate mail if you want. I would use, if I was governor of Wisconsin and I had executive power, if the bill that I would support would be one that says in Wisconsin, you can have an abortion, not because it's right, because anybody who's going to listen to the show and say, Nick, abortion is wrong, I'll concede that, look, it's above my pay grade. Do I think abortion is wrong prior to viability? Probably, but that's a religious belief, not a legal belief. And I've gone through this before in the show. 17-year-olds can't sign contracts, don't have the full rights of an adult. 5-year-olds don't have the right to keep and bear arms. You can't open carry as a 5-year-old. And I don't think anybody here is saying you should be able to. So you don't get all your rights until you reach adulthood. In fact, now you don't get all of them until you're 21. Even after adulthood. So there's already legal precedent that rights, not everybody has the same rights. If you're under the age of 18, your rights belong to your parents unless you get emancipated. Now, if you're not even born, your rights exist with your mother, I believe, prior to the point of viability. That's the standard that I would draw, the legal standard, not the moral standard. Because if you're going to say, Nick, abortion is wrong after conception, I'll say, okay, wrong, sure. Legally, no. Morally, I will, what do you call that when you're in court and you, what's the phrase? Excuse me. The last time I talked about this in the show, that trying to remember that word, I couldn't think of it either. It's not submit. We will not concede. Anyway, stipulate. I will stipulate that abortion after conception is, if God was sitting here talking to us, he'd probably say, yeah, that's a sin. That's wrong. But the legal standard, I believe, should be post-viability. That child could survive. It's not dependent on the mother for its life. Then the mother does not have a right to take that child, that fetus's life, that baby's life. Prior to, if that baby could not survive outside the womb, then it's dependent on the mother for its life. It's not its own person. Legally, not morally, but legally. And I think that's a standard that a lot of Republicans would agree with and support. And look, I understand that that might change. As medical technology gets better, we might say, hey, this is viable. You know, okay, well then harvest the fetus and if that's what you, you know, and then we got to have a conversation about social spending, because if a mother doesn't want to have her baby, then and it's viable, well then, what about these in vitro fertilized babies? That's fertilization. It's not even in the mother. So then we would have to have a discussion about what kind of social spending are we going to have to find each of those fertilized eggs a surrogate to birth them. And then who's going to pay for that? I mean, again, that's just a discussion we'd have to have. If the standard is going to be prior to viability, or excuse me, if that viability standard gets so soon that a fertilized egg is, or maybe that's what, maybe Republicans want to fertilize. Some Republicans want to outlaw artificial insemination. Again, I don't know, but that's just where we get down to a real nuanced and complicated discussion. And for that reason, again, I think from a legal standard, you set a, effectively, I don't think you're ever going to be able to birth a baby without a mother, a living full, you know, so there's going to be that viability standard will always be there, where you say to people, look, if you want an abortion, you got to do it before 12 weeks or before 8 weeks or whatever, that, you know, that's just, or just pick a standard and set it, you know, 12 weeks, that's it. 10 weeks, that's it. Illegal after that, that's it. And that's the legal standard, not the moral standard, but the legal standard. And so that's why I think Republicans that think that, I think Republicans will continue to lose this issue if they are for the, if they think that everybody out there is for the complete 100% ban on abortions, period. Because I don't think that's where everybody's at. But I hear a lot of Republicans and a lot of Republican talking heads that seem to act like they believe that they understand the pulse of the country and that the pulse of the country is really for flat out abortion bans. And I just don't think they are. I really don't. So anyway, that's the show for today. No live listeners today, no live callers today. And maybe we'll get back to that one of these days when that winter comes around and people aren't busy. And summer's always been low listenership, certainly for live shows. You guys listen to podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. You guys have a great week. Perhaps we will talk to you again next Sunday. Be well armed. Carry on. Get out on Tuesday and vote, whoever you're voting for. Be interesting to see who we're to. That's what we'll talk about. Well, maybe we'll do. I guess that's probably what we'll be talking about next week on the show, is whoever won the Republican primary for governor and the other races as well. Have a great week. Carry on.
Well-Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.